Hey, everybody. No advertisers on this episode, on a special Sunday episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. My conversation with First Principles Forum in Indiana. And I take some questions from the audience. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support The Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Come to our Student Action Summit this Friday in Florida. It'll blow your mind. tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. Get your ticket today. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Thank you, everybody. Great introduction. Thank you.
Well, Charlie and I are excited because on the way walking over here, I was telling him some thoughts I had about how deep we want to go. And you said, all right,
let's do it.
Charlie, your new book just came out, The Great Reset.
Yes.
A lot of people have heard the term. A lot of people don't understand what that term means. So let's go through some definitions. We want to touch on the Great Reset.
Yes.
And I want you to tell us what a globalist is.
You got it. Great to be here, by the way. I love Indiana. I grew up in Illinois, right across the border. Any other refugees from Illinois? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, freedom lovers that found a better place. So we'll get into the Great Reset in a second, but many of you don't know this. We have term limits in Illinois, but it's different than most states. It's one term in office, one term in jail. So when we ask for our governor's cell number, we actually mean his cell number. If you were there last night, you had to hear that twice now in the last, almost three times, right, Micah, in the last 24 hours? It works every single time. So honored to be here. I love Indiana. So the Great Reset, it's a very real thing. It came after the Chinese Fauci coronavirus. The World Economic Forum wrote a booklet called Pushing Towards the Great Reset. But first, let's talk about what the World Economic Forum is and what the World Health Assembly is. So the World Economic Forum is an organization that meets in Davos, Switzerland every year. They're actually just concluding their meeting right now. This is celebrities, heads of state, heads of business. They get together to try and further globalize the world. So what does that mean? A borderless, one world currency. They have stated aims and objectives, what the Great Reset is and what they think the world is going to look like in the coming decades, if you will, in 2030 or 2040. Some of their goals are so provocative. I personally believe it's called hiding in plain sight. So my belief is that it's so hard to grasp that their communication strategy is that instead of doing it in kind of smoke-filled rooms, they just put it on a website, and then they say, oh, it's not news. It's, come on, it's right there on the website. And you read this stuff, you're like, oh, wow, you say that we're going to own nothing and we're going to be happy by the year 2030. Like, that's really creepy.
And they're serious.
And they're very serious. And so the World Economic Forum meets with regularity, and they have a lot of power. Now, out of these meetings come other kind of global contracts and treaties. And the kind of push towards this borderless society that we're seeing, you know, very quickly here in the West, that's kind of where it's masterminded. Now, this is all run by an individual by the name of Klaus Schwab. Now, if anyone ever seen the Bond film Spectre, there is that character called Blofeld, acted by the great Christoph Waltz. It's like exactly the same. I mean, this Klaus Schwab guy wears like a space suit. It's like straight out of Central Casting. Now, whoever in the European kind of community thought it'd be a good idea to have a very hard to understand German as the head of like the Bond villain thing. Like you couldn't pick the French guy when we are going to take over the world. And like when he talks, you can't even believe it. And so they just got done with their meeting. They talk about digital vaccine passports. They're talking about the inevitability of world currencies collapsing. So we're going to explore this a little bit because I believe that if you get even a little bit of what I'm talking about tonight, it's the proper prism for you to be able to view otherwise confusing news.
That's true.
And so you see these news items, you're like, well, why are they doing that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I do that almost every day, right? But then if you realize that there is a greater goal to reset the world, then all of a sudden it starts to make more sense. But let's kind of go to that term, reset. You can't reset something or reboot something unless it's broken. So first you must break it. And I believe personally we're living through the intentional breaking of a lot of what we hold near and dear here in the West and in America, especially on the terms of border, economic strength, and otherwise. One other point I want to make about the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum is that whenever we mention it, the media always kind of calls this a conspiracy theory. You're more than welcome to go tonight and fact check everything I'm saying. It's on the World Economic Forum website. Very clearly, you say, that's really what they're talking about and what they're planning. So there's 8 goals. We could talk about that tonight if you want to explore that. But I personally believe the most important news item that has not been covered the last couple weeks was the gathering in the World Economic Forum and the gathering happening right now in Geneva, Switzerland with the World Health Assembly. And praise God, 12 out of 13 of the amendments that the Biden administration came to try to impose, which actually would have weakened America and would have brought in potential international digital vaccine passports, have failed at the World Health Assembly in the last couple of days. And largely because of all of you that have been shining a light on that and really exposing that. So what is a globalist? Someone who does not want nations. They want a one world global community, and they want to be part of the group that are calling the shots.
And so often, like you said, you will hear in the media, this is another conspiracy theory. And just, I want you to share this, Charlie. If it was a conspiracy theory, you guys sent a crew to Davos and to Switzerland, right, and something happened. You're not going to try and close someone's mouth if it's a conspiracy theory. So will you explain to people what happened to Jack when he was...
So we have the great Jack Posobiec that works with us at Turning Point USA. Some of you might follow him. He's one of the best out there as far as breaking news. He's incredible. And we work with him on a daily basis. So the World Economic Forum, they posted their dates. I said, Jack, you're going to Davos. Congratulations. Davos? Like, what? So we sent him out to Davos just to be a grassroots reporter to kind of see what's happening. Now, mind you, this is a militarized town at this point. These are the people that want a borderless society, and you cannot walk a block without having a massive fence erected or snipers on the roof. You know, for everything they say that we shouldn't have for our society, they have for themselves. Only in Davos, Switzerland, can 5,000 people lecture you about climate change when they get there to and from on their private jets, right? Only in Davos, Switzerland is that possible. So we send Jack Posobiec there to do some reporting, and he really is just kind of walking the streets of Davos, and out of nowhere, like 20 armed guys pop up with these badges that say World Economic Forum Police, and they detain him. They want to see his camera footage. They say he can no longer be filming. Now, look, Switzerland does not have a First Amendment like we do. We should be very thankful for our founding fathers, by the way, for giving us the ability to challenge power. The fact we even have the last gasp of that kind of freedom is amazing. So Jack was detained for quite some time, asked all these questions by these super angry authoritarian Swiss people. And Jack, to his credit, held the ground. Like, what do you mean? I'm a journalist. Why can't I be here? And finally, they let him go. Tape went totally viral. And they just kind of go, they start asking questions about Turning Point USA. And I can't tell you how comforting it is to know the World Economic Forum is worried about Turning Point USA. Right. It's one of the great accomplishments of my career that these people, like, Turning Point set a representative? Like, perfect. It's great. So we have a new book out that any one of you guys can get free of charge. Just not free of charge. It's a gift of any amount, I should say. $5, $2, $10 at tpusa.com, called The Conservative Response to the Great Reset, because this can be very overwhelming. And if I could just add a couple more details about
Please.
This. So you go to the World Economic Forum website. They have what they think the world is going to look like by 2030. These are aims or objectives or goals. Some of these are kind of really weird. For example, you're not going to eat meat anymore. That we'll have people going to Mars. Okay, not a big deal. But there are 3 in particular that I want to zero in on that I think are really important. Okay, number one, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Okay, private property is a necessary prerequisite to freedom. If you cannot own stuff, you are not free. Now, we take that for granted. We take it for granted because we've all grown up in a world where private property rights are respected. By the way, private property is also your thoughts. It's also your opinions. It's also your ability to copyright your own work. For those of you that are artists or musicians, private property means that you'd own nothing. This is a goal that they think is going to happen by 2030. Boy, that starts to all of a sudden add some clarity to the otherwise confusing inflation policies we've seen. You can only make people own nothing if you completely deteriorate the currency. So number one, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Number two, America will no longer be the world superpower. That's a stated goal by the World Economic Forum. So in order to get the world to become kind of a globalist project, they must destroy America's strength and dominance, both economically, our sovereignty, and otherwise. It's right there on the website that America will no longer be the world superpower. And then the third one is that Western values will be brought to a breaking point. Now, this one in particular kind of goes over people's heads. What are Western values? For those of you that have traveled the world, you know how exceptional Western values are. Things that we take for granted. Due process, separation of powers, consent of the governed, independent judiciary, constitutional rights. Also, the strong defending the weak. We take that for granted. Most other countries do not have it where the strong go out of their way to protect the weak. If any of you have spent time in India, you know it's a caste system that if you're in a certain area, you have no moral obligation to stop and help somebody on the side of the road. It's a Western value to have a let's say, a focus that if you have something, that you should try to help somebody else. Now, Western values, I believe, have created the most wealthy, the most generous, the greatest place to live in the history of the world, period. Western values are an outgrowth of the Bible, outgrowth of this idea of self-government, first principles, of course, principles given to us by God. What do you replace Western values with? Well, they would replace them with this idea of not the many ruling the few, but the few ruling the many. Almost all throughout human history, people were not citizens, they were subjects, or they were slaves, or they were serfs. We get to be citizens. That means we're co-owners of our government. It's a very unusual thing. It's rare, and they're trying to end it because citizens ask questions. Citizens can kick tyrants out of power. They want the end of the citizen. It's up to us to say, no, the citizen is going to rise again and take power away from the regime. That's up for us to do. However, they don't like this idea of the disagreeable act of citizen. And so those are so they have a lot of stated goals, but I just want to add one thing, and I have to take it, and it's not a cheap shot. I just hope you all know this. Your governor went and visited the World Economic Forum inexplicably, yeah. And I can't even imagine how you would be able to look yourself in the mirror or your voters and say, I'm going to go spend time with the people that are saying we want America to be weaker. They're saying that the three goals, you'll own nothing, you'll be happy. America will no longer be the world superpower. And Western values will be brought to a breaking point.
Synthetic organs, too. They talk about the synthetic
organs. Yes, synthetic organs and all sorts. COVID passports. There was someone who just said that free speech is a construct that we must destroy. Man, Indiana is facing a lot of problems right now. What the heck is your governor doing in Davos, Switzerland, rubbing elbows with these people? I don't know. That's the only time I'll mention it. It deserves focus because... It's really extraordinary. Someone told me that the other day. I could not believe it.
It's mind-boggling. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, how did this happen so quickly?
Yeah.
Why is this all of a sudden happening? And the truth of the matter is that this is not all of a sudden happening. This has been planned for decades. This is a well-thought-out strategic plan. And so I want to kind of go through what we call the seven mountains. The seven mountains are critical in terms of how you take something, break it from within, and change it. And that is what we're all experiencing. The seven mountains, I'm going to say them all, and then Charlie will just take them as we go. It's arts, it's commerce, it's education, it's family, it's government, it's media, and it's religion. How are all these things connected, and how are they doing it? Let's take arts.
Yeah, so the seven mountains of cultural influence, it actually started with a Pentecostal preacher who came up with this in the 1940s or 50s, who actually said this is how Christians are going to take back the culture. What he didn't realize is that he beautifully articulated how the left was taking over the culture, just so you understand the background. So yeah. Those seven mountains of cultural influence are a really good way to divide every single way the left has made America less free in the last couple decades. So let's start with the arts. My goodness, look at Disney. I grew up watching Disney films. Disney made billions of dollars being a safe haven for families. Disney was always the safe choice where moms and dads could be making dinner, turn on a Disney film, and you don't have to be policing everything that's on TV because you know that there were good values and morals and clean content there. Disney has taken a sharp turn from a safe haven for families to now put forward content that is so reprehensible, where they are saying that 50% of their characters by the end of this calendar year are going to be gay, bisexual, or transgender, and that almost every single one of their movies is going to have a gay kissing scene for 5-, 6-, and 7-year-olds to see. They are now saying that, and then they come out against the Florida voting law, which is like the most boring law ever, by the way, saying that parents should know what their children are being taught and that sex education has no place for a 4-, 5-, or 6-year-old.
Nowhere in that law did it say don't say gay.
Yeah, they just made it up. It's a complete fabrication. And so then Disney comes in and says this is one of the worst acts against trans people ever, which is just a lie. It's a complete and total fabrication. Well, Disney stock is down 25% in the last 60 days, which gives me great comfort. But it's not just Disney. And by the way, you should totally boycott Disney. I am. Cancel your subscription. They're going down like a rock. That includes Hulu for all of you keeping score at home. By the way, sorry, I know. I'm a big Frasier fan. I can no longer watch Frasier. It's the only place you're able to get Frasier's at Hulu. Now, that's also Netflix. Netflix has become a total woke company. They have a new special that came out with a pregnant man called He's Expecting. Now, I want to be very clear, though. These kind of outrageous examples I'm giving are recent and receive backlash. But what doesn't get the attention is that the subtle kind of mentions in the arts over the last 30 to 40 years were actually far more effective than He's Expecting, which is just insane. People look at that, or the special Cuties that Netflix did, which was basically child pornography, by the way. In fact, Netflix got indicted in a county in Texas for putting that forward. That's not an exaggeration. It's so extraordinary when you watch that special. It's beyond what I could, it's sick, anyone that has to watch that. And so, but what they did with the arts, though, is they realized that, look, you guys can teach your kids your whatever values you want. If we control what movies and TV shows they watch, then we're really going to shape how they view the world. And so arts and the entertainment, from the music that young people listen to the stories that are told, they've completely taken it over. But here's the good news, though. Here's why I think it's totally falling apart, is that the liberal story or the left-wing story, actually, no one wants to go watch it. So the hero's journey is the conservative story. It's the story of Star Wars, it's the story of Lord of the Rings, and it's the story of Harry Potter. You know, all three of those stories are exactly the same story, just retold differently. I'll prove it to you. A person without a father grows up in a place of vulnerability, like under a staircase, on Tatooine, or in the Shire. Out of nowhere, they get called to adventure, and someone who knows what they're talking about, an age elder, comes in and charts their direction, like Gandalf, like Dumbledore, or like Obi-Wan Kenobi. They go through kind of a period of self-reflection, like, who am I and how did I get here? They start to rebel against that and they start to build a team like in Harry Potter would be Hermione or Ron, or in Star Wars would be Chewbacca and Han Solo, or in Lord of the Rings would be Bilbo and the entire team of hobbits. They then go on this journey and they realize that when they have to go fight evil, the true evil that they have to confront is actually in themselves. The climax of all three films, Harry Potter, Frodo, and Star Wars, is it's the voice in your head. It's your own dragon that you have to slay in order to be able to get to that next level. All three of them end the same way, right? Now, that's an awesome story. All of us know it because it resonates with us because we live it every single day. The left-winger story is like, okay, Luke Skywalker grows up on Tatooine. He does a lot of weed, and he's becomes like a transgender social justice warrior activist. And Obi-Wan Kenobi tries to tell him to fight evil. He says, there's no such thing as good and evil, and I don't
everyone's
have time.
Everyone's happy.
But yeah.
Everyone's happy.
Yeah, everyone's fine, and everyone can kind of do their own thing. No one wants to go buy tickets to go watch that movie. It's really boring, actually. We want the Dragon Slayer. We want the call to adventure. We want the hero's journey. That's why these Netflix stories are so if I have to watch another one of these Netflix, again, it's like market research. Every story is the same. Like socially estranged 19-year-old youth who has gender identity problems, gets into heavy drugs, and like meanders between Seattle and Portland and has like free sex and like ends up like almost committing suicide, decides not to, and finds a cooking hobby. It's really awful television. And this is one of the reasons why these companies are cratering. Because guess what? The West was built on the story of the individual challenging evil and overcoming that evil. And as long as they try to eradicate those stories, we're going to have a chance to win. So that's an extended answer on the arts part.
Well, and the arts part feeds directly into our commerce and directly into our economy and all of those things. Let's break down that and how that's been attacked.
For commerce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Commerce.
And this is the hardest one for a lot of people here to grasp, right? Because I grew up in America where business was on team right, where business was team America. They were team free markets. And, you know, we were always kind of fighting the opponents of business. You remember that. It was the big companies would always kind of make fun of Al Sharpton when he kind of came to go ask for money. Like, who is this guy, right? Like, he's just making stuff up. He's just screaming it. It's been a total change. Largely because of college. We'll get into that. But corporations have now totally become co-opted by the worst, most woke social justice warrior influences you can imagine. I mean, how did we get to a place where all of a sudden these otherwise non-political companies like Google are coming out and you type in, can a man become pregnant in Google? And the answer is yes. Where Apple comes out, and you could check it on your iPhone tonight, where they have a pregnant man emoji on your Apple iPhone. And you say, how on earth did this happen? Well, largely because of weakness and because the CEOs were on the latter end of their career. They just wanted to cash out. They wanted to get their bonuses. And they didn't want to try to confront the HR demons, if you will, of these kind of social justice warrior activists that have infiltrated their company. But I have another opinion, though, which is, this is very contrarian, so go with me really quickly on this. I think cheap money policies subsidize really bad social behavior. So when you print all this money out of thin air after you lock down society and everyone gets record corporate profits artificially, then really, really bad ideas are allowed to be entertained because the company is not in a place of crisis. Now, this is the only good thing that will come out of a recession is that finally the woke people, all of a sudden they're going to do like kind of a forensic audit of Coca-Cola and be like, yeah, those 3,000 lunatics that work in the HR department that kind of work on Tuesday and maybe Thursday, and they're constantly complaining and telling us to fire every white man in our company. Like, maybe we should fire them because we're not turning a profit this quarter, right? And so cheap money policies and kind of really bad business practices, I believe, have unintentionally subsidized the worst influences that have now infiltrated corporate America. When companies have to reduce their workforce and tighten their belt, the woke will be the first to go. And it will be hilarious to see these CEOs, not just for the woke, these CEOs that are going to get all these leaks on them and these harassment suits. Like, I thought we were buddies. I gave $100 million to BLM. It's like, you were never really with us, you fake. And like, you can never appease these people, right? But I just want to make sure you guys know, out of the Fortune 100 companies, there might be a couple exceptions, but a majority of the Fortune 100 companies are at direct war with your values. And I know that's a hard thing for people to accept and to believe, but it's now become a total co-opted with team left, and that's something we have to admit and push back against.
And it's important to research those things as well, because they don't hide a lot of these agendas. We talk about, we laugh about a pregnant male emoji. We talk about infiltration. It's a real thing. It's very sad because our children, 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 year olds, are seeing this and they're becoming confused and they're becoming desensitized to basic values. And that's where we go into the education, because it's been infiltration there as well.
Totally. And just one more thought. You guys can look up the exact numbers yourself, but something like 95% of all Google, Facebook, and Twitter employees gave money to Joe Biden, and less than 1% gave money to Trump. Goldman Sachs was well over 85%. You can go look up the numbers yourself, but corporate America tilts so dramatically in one direction, it will just blow you away, that these companies that should be pro-American, that have benefited so much from our system, are now at war with our values. Okay, so education. This is the biggest one. This is the one that I spend all my time on. Education comes from a Latin word, which means to lead forth. And we are not leading forth our children towards wisdom or virtue recently. Our education system is so sorely broken from the beginning to college and to post-college, to master, to doctorate. One of the only positives that I believe that came out of the Fauci virus was the fact that parents finally started to get active, engaged, and mad at what their kids were being taught in these schools. And I just want to encourage all of you, and I want to thank all of you. If you're a mom out there that asks questions forcefully of a teacher or administrator, thank you. Keep it up. If you showed up at a school board meeting, thank you. Keep it up. You are heroes. You need to keep the pressure on, because you are not just impacting your kids' education. You have made the education better for parents who have no idea, who don't believe you. You've improved the well-being of education for people all across the board. So I just want to encourage you for that.
And I want to ask you this about that too, because there have been parents that have come to me and asked, well, how do we say something? What do we say? We're not allowed to go to school board meetings sometimes. We're being shut down. Do you have any maybe tips or wisdom that our parents can utilize?
Yeah, and actually, we got a great question yesterday of somebody who is a school board member. I don't know if she's here tonight. She asked a really good question. Look, it's the questions are almost always the same, which is you got to find the curriculum, find out first-person testimonials, find out if they're doing diversity, equity, inclusion seminars. And so they're not going to call it critical race theory. Okay, they've actually learned.
They rename it.
They rename it. It's by a completely different name. But look, you should ask a very simple question, which is our district actually focusing on race, or are we focusing on character? Or are we focusing on the spirit and soul of an individual? Focusing on race is bad for everybody. I don't care about race, and you shouldn't either. The other side cares about race. Race is irrelevant. I care about your character. I care about who you are as a human being. Your melanin content is completely immaterial. And so, but these are good questions just to ask. And so you could also fill out a FOIA, which your attorney general can help you with, which is a Freedom of Information request or Freedom of Information Act to go. And now, mind you, schools can play games and they could delay you and they could filibuster, all those different sorts of things. Let me just say one more thing about education, though, is that, and now I'm going to challenge everybody in the audience a little bit. You might get a little uncomfortable at this time, but that's okay. You brought me here to tell you the truth, not just to, you know, tell everything that's rosy. College, as it is right now, is doing unbelievable damage to our country. And it needs to be repeated, and it needs to be understood by everybody. A majority of kids going to college should not be going to college. They shouldn't. College is a scam for most kids that go to college. Just ask them. They have to take classes they don't want to take. They said, I wouldn't be here if my parents didn't force me. A vast majority of people that go to college are not going to become engineers or doctors or lawyers. They're coming to get a piece of paper because they're told they have to go. If you send your child or grandchild to college, you are playing Russian roulette with their values. And if you have a kid that successfully survived college and still shares your values, praise God every single day. Because the most frustrating conversations I have and the notes that I get from our over 100,000 donors we have at Turning Point USA are parents that write me and they say, I dropped my kid off at Notre Dame. I dropped my kid off at Northwestern and I've never seen them since. They came back for Thanksgiving and I said, hey, honey, how was your first semester at Northwestern? Excuse me, I'm non-binary now. It's like, oh, okay, like, well, let's have a good Thanksgiving. No, it's Indigenous Peoples Day and that turkey did not consent to being killed and eaten and I'm a vegan. How dare you contribute to fossil? I said, what is this? I'm paying for this. Yes, you are, actually. And so we need more people in the trades. We need more carpenters, electricians, and plumbers and people that work with their hands in our country. Now, let me challenge you further, though. I'm so glad everyone applauds, but we said this in our conversation earlier. I'm going to challenge you a little bit. Don't be the parent that quietly doesn't want your kid to work construction, because that's most people in upper middle class America. Most people in this room, if you're honest with yourselves, you don't want your kid to become a plumber, because it would be tough explaining to your neighbors your kid became a plumber. It's true. So just, and I, the number one reason why kids are pressured into four-year degrees is because of parental pressure and parent and just kind of general family pressure. Now, what do the numbers show? The numbers show that 41% of kids that go to college don't graduate. 41%. 41% of kids that enroll do not graduate. Now, I think Indiana schools are a little bit better, but who knows, right? But go see what they're teaching in these schools.
And the trades are making a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, the average plumber in Phoenix is earning like $81,000 a year. I mean, I had to call in a plumber and it's like he could charge whatever he wanted. It was like scheduling a meeting with the Pope. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I have an opening between, you know, 2:45 and 3:00 on this day 3 weeks from now. And they're calling all the shots. And because there's not enough of them, right? It's because we have a lot of people that went to Purdue or went to IU and they studied lesbian poetry or lesbian archery or whatever. But they didn't, we don't have the people that are necessary to build a strong country. And it's a lot of different factors that play into that. It's the demeaning of the muscular labor. It's the war on the class that actually built America. But the final point I'll put is this, is what is the purpose of education? And then I'll stop the overly provocative comments for about 5 minutes, which is this. The purpose of education is not to hear what kids think, okay? This is why I'm such a big fan of classical education. One of the worst things that ever happened, no, I'm a huge fan of class, I'm a massive fan. One of the worst things ever happened in education is where all of a sudden you go around the room to ask kindergartners what they think. It's irrelevant what they think. They're kindergartners. They're almost all emotion. No, seriously. Now you should ask them, you should try to get them in a dialectic or a dialogue process to get closer to truth. But proper education, done the right way, is done in a process. Classical does it the best. There's other ways, but classical does it the best, where the student understands they are on a hard work journey to understand the beautiful, the good, and the true. It's not about trying to feel good. It's not, and this is another thing about education. This is why we have the most miserable generation in history. Because, and I know it, because a lot of my friends are totally miserable and they grew up in the same generation I did. Which is, this is the damage of the self-esteem movement. The self-esteem movement had really good intentions. It has done unbelievable damage to our country. Where you kind of walk around a school and it's this poster and it says, you're perfect the way you are. And I remember turning to a teacher, I said, if I'm perfect the way I am, why am I in school? Why am I studying? Why am I pushing myself? No, instead the poster should be, you're not who you could be yet. That's a lot different. It's a totally different way. Instead, it's, oh no, you have no improvements. You're perfect. No, you're not actually. And for young men, by the way, being told you're perfect does unbelievable damage. Men need adventure. Men need confrontation. Men need to be challenged. You want to know why we have all these horrific tragedies happening, all this? The isolation of young men and the hyperfeminization of our culture and our education system is largely to blame.
And I think, too, when we go into conversations, you're asking school boards, you're asking teachers, understand the definition that they're operating under. One of the biggest questions I always tell parents is, know the difference between equity and equality. Those are two very fundamentally different things. And when people say equity, a lot of times people think they're talking about equality, and they're not.
Yeah, and so there's equality under the law, which is what our country was founded on. There is equality of opportunity, which is something we should strive for, but we're never going to get. But we can get close through charter schools and trying to bring people out. These are wonderful efforts. We're never going to get there because we live in a fallen and broken world. But then there's equality of outcome, which is equity.
Exactly.
And that is wrong. Equity is redistribution. Equity is taking from the successful or the industrious or the disciplined to give to the people that are not as disciplined or not have not applied themselves as much, okay? So equity is using force to try to balance out the end of the equation. And here's something that no one likes to hear. You cannot have liberty without some bad outcomes. It's impossible. If I gave every single one of you $100 and you came back a week from now, some people would make really good decisions and you'd go buy some cryptocurrency I never heard of and you're super rich. Some of you would just go to the bar and gamble it and you'd have nothing. When you have agency, that means you're going to have outliers. Now, that doesn't mean we should have charity and compassion and benevolence for those people. But when you're talking about the use of the state in that regard, then all of a sudden you're talking about punishing the successful, the entrepreneurial, the industrious, and the people that had good ideas at the expense of the people that did not properly discipline themselves or have such as good ideas. So it's a tough truth that people don't want to say out loud.
We talked a little bit about family. Let's go into that quickly. Yep. You kind of already talked about it, but there's an intentional effort to redefine the family and to break the family from within.
The family, strong families are necessary to try to keep a society free. The stronger the family, the weaker the tyrant. It's that simple. When families are strong, government is not as necessary for social programs, for interventions, all these different sorts of things. So there's been a deliberate attempt to try to destroy the family. Look, I could go into great detail about some of the reasons for this. I believe that in the 1960s and early 1970s, the feminist movement did a lot of damage to destroying what it really means to have strong nuclear families in America. We are now seeing a vast majority of Black Americans grow up without a stable father in the home. It's trending towards a majority of white Americans are growing up without a stable father in the home. I really put the blame mostly on men in this equation, though. I mentioned this in the end of my previous answer. The hyperfeminization of men has been one of the worst things ever to happen. I believe it involves diet as well. You are not the man your grandfather was. Testosterone levels are down 80% over the last 30 years. I think it's everything from the toxins in our food to from oversaturated fat diet to high fructose corn syrup overdone in our society and overdone in our diets. You look at every single study, there's got to be some explanation for it. I also think less red meat has not been a good thing for keeping testosterone levels high. I'm super provocative. People attack me like you wouldn't believe when I say that. Like, no, actually, red meat's awesome and it's good for society because they did it for thousands of years and they were just fine. So, but yeah, the family, look, we have a society right now where we have encouraged people to almost marry the government and not stay loyally married to their spouse. We need strong families. We need lots of children. And look, where we are right now, just so everyone understands, we are on the verge of a population collapse. We are on the precipice of having so few children in America that we are well below replication and replacement levels. Elon Musk talks about this openly. It's the opposite of what the climate change alarmists have actually been saying recently. So we have the least married generation in history and having the least children ever. So this is really interesting because you would think that post-COVID, when everyone is kind of hunkered down at home all the time, that birth rates would go up. But they actually went down substantially. And that goes to show, like, they went down unlike anything we've ever seen, and people can't believe it. And they went down because having children is a value. the impulse to do what it requires to have children is not a value. That's an impulse. But if you have the technology to prevent yourself from having children, you will do that. You know how many 30-somethings right now are having difficulty now having children? And there's a massive fertility issue in America. That's a separate issue that needs to be addressed. But look, the family is instrumental to being able to preserve liberty. And they would love nothing more than breaking the strong nuclear family. That was a stated goal of BLM, by the way, which is to destroy the Western prescribed nuclear family.
And it was on their website.
Yes.
They were not hiding this. It was on their website, but we weren't being told. The media was not explaining to people who founded this. What is their stated goal? And what is the outcome that they're looking for? And a lot of people thought out of their good hearts that they were supporting something that was going to do good, that stood for good, that stood for civil rights. It does not stand for any of those things. And unfortunately, we're going to talk about media next. The media was not educating people on what they were supporting. Businesses were not being educated on what they were supporting. Now we see a lot of corruption that has come out of that organization. So how does all this happen? How does this all pull together? The media is a big part of it.
You know all about the media. You could tell us more about the media than I could. The media, I've never had less faith, less confidence, less respect for the mainstream media than what I have today. And I wish that wasn't the case.
And I will echo that, because being in the media, it's not what many of us journalists signed up for. Our job as journalists was to practice ethical journalism, to give you full and complete unbiased information so that you have the freedom to make well-educated decisions for yourself and for your family. That is not what's happening right now. The moment the media decided we're going to manipulate information, we're going to omit information, they took on the role of God. God gives us free will. The media is not even giving us the basic freedom of free will to make educated decisions. And that is a very serious and sick problem. Yeah, and most people don't realize how bad it is.
These are activists that pretend to be journalists. And so the good news is that people are defecting from this in record numbers. I mean, CNN Plus, they spent $300 million and it collapsed after like two Scaramucci's. I mean, it was like 2 weeks and the whole thing just totally imploded. And look, I mean, Joe Rogan had the greatest quote about CNN Plus. He said, "Who there thought it would be a good idea to charge people money for something they wouldn't want to watch for free?" One of the great quotes, right? I mean, it's just, that's why Joe Rogan is the number one podcaster on the planet. He's great. We'll talk about that. Here's the good. Let me kind of add us some good news about the media. Yes, the left controls the media, but out of every single vertical, this is the one that I'm the most optimistic about. I'll be very honest. I have seen more entrepreneurial activity, more new kind of ventures in this space than I ever would have dreamed possible. And so Joe Rogan is the number one podcaster on the planet after they tried to destroy him, after they tried to smear him. And so if you want to get some hope, because I know a lot of you want some hope, go to Apple Podcasts and just go to the top 20 podcasts out there in the news category. Consistently, 14 to 15 out of the top 20 podcasts on Apple Podcasts are conservative podcasts. And young people listen to podcasts a lot more than people over the age of 50. So I think about it. So and there's no way you can manipulate this, by the way. It's straight up whichever podcasts are the most successful, most popular, getting the most subscriptions. And so there are podcasts like ours, like Ben Shapiro, like Dan Bongino, like Steve Bannon, you know, like Matt Walsh, like Michael Knowles, like Candace Owens. And you look at this and there's the New York Times and NPR. They're top five. But then it's just this nonstop, like conservative, 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 conservative. And what is it about podcasts, though? Is that the delivery mechanism is someone has to go seek it out, right? It's like you can turn on a channel, I guess, if you watch it on YouTube or on Rumble. But the point is that you have to earn your listeners. Is that the point with cable news is it's kind of automatic viewing. You kind of just turn it on. It's like that old Seinfeld thing. Why are you watching? Well, it's because it's on TV. It's like, oh, they're going to watch it. It's because it's on TV. It's kind of automatic. Podcast, you're not going to go listen to a podcast unless it's good. Unless you find some meaning in it, unless you find something worthwhile. And conservatives are dominating the podcast space. We dominate on every single one, whenever we are given a fair hearing. So one of my favorite kind of questions that Mark Zuckerberg got in front of Congress, well, my second favorite question, was when one of those 85-year-old senators asked him, like, hey, can you help me log into my Facebook? Because I can't remember. No, I'm kidding. That didn't happen. So, but Zuckerberg was asked, they said, why? It was by one of these left-wing senators. I think it was Elizabeth Warren. Why is it that conservative content does so well on Facebook? Because he was expecting like some sort of manipulation. And Zuckerberg under oath said, It's just the most popular content on our platform. He's like, we've done every data analysis. People want to see it. People want to share it. And it does really, really well. And by the way, it's totally true. You look at the most popular Facebook pages in America, the top 50, like 32 out of 50 are conservative run pages. So what am I getting at here? Outside of CNN, outside of NPR, which is funded by our taxpayer dollars, outside of the New York Times, the media landscape is changing rapidly.
And drastically.
And drastic, in such an exciting and new way. And so, but they've done everything they possibly can. This is why, by the way, they have to. They're pulling out every trick in the book to make sure Elon Musk doesn't buy Twitter. They have to make, because censorship is central to their regime. Now, who here wants hope? You guys all want hope? Let me tell you one thing that will give you hope.
Yes.
If their victory was inevitable, their propaganda would not be necessary. If it was inevitable that they were going to win, they would not have to lie to us every single night. And it goes to show that there's so much weakness in what they're trying to actually implement, that their fear is a fair and honest hearing. That one of the reasons why Donald Trump won in 2016 was because Twitter and Facebook was kind of like the Wild West. Like, if you had a good idea, they locked that down in 2020. Hunter Biden laptop story, nope. Zuckerberg tried to atone for his sin of letting Trump being president by putting $400 million through Zuckerboxes all across the country, these drop boxes. So to close the point on media, media is how we consume information news of the day. 5 years ago, I would have been like, oh man, like 3 years ago, I'd been like, boy, it would have been tough. We have new platforms. We have Rumble. We have Truth Social. We have Parler. We have Getter. Ooh, okay. we have all these different things. So I'm very optimistic on the media front.
And
I really am.
Numbers also show that our young people have such a thirst for truth right now. And that's why this post-truth society is so dangerous. We just need to make sure our young people have access to the truth, and these podcasts and the media is doing that. Really quick, 5 more minutes, because I want to give you and the audience an opportunity to ask Charlie questions. Religion. When we look at the political landscape, a lot of us will say, and I know, Charlie, you've talked about this, this really is not a political fight. It is a spiritual fight. And so would you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, look, religion always, especially in American Christianity, it was traditionally on team right. It was definitely more on the conservative side. But in recent years, I think we've seen a lot of pastors and churches all of a sudden kind of become left-wing activist organizations, where I drive by church after church and they have the LGBT flag or they have the Black Lives Matter flag. What on earth is going on here? And they've understood that it's a key pillar of cultural influence to try to impact and to try to steer in a favorable direction. I do believe this is a spiritual fight. I do believe there's an invisible war that manifests itself in the visible. And I believe that we must engage in that in any way we possibly can. But I think we must understand, though, that George Soros and the left, they are pumping in tons of money to try to take over churches, take over seminaries, because they think if they can get the church to become further left wing, then the country will fall with it. And we talked with Pastor Micah at great length about this last evening. But I believe the opposite. I think the church is starting to rise. I think the church is starting to stand. I think we're seeing courageous pastors starting to break out.
Jack Hibbs is one of the
Jack's
favorite
my man.
Friends.
Jack Hibbs and many others. So I'm very optimistic about what's happening there, but it's going to be a fight.
And I would say this too. Make sure your church is teaching biblical principles, not watered down I would say social principles. Yeah. It has to be biblical principles because God's word never changes.
Bad theology leads to bad politics.
I'm going to come down and I'm going to offer the mic to anyone who has a question. We have about 5 or 6 minutes before our young people go and spend some time with Charlie. So if you'd like to ask a question, quickly make your way here so we can get the microphone to you. Anyone have questions?
Hi, Charlie. I'm 50. I graduated from college with a bachelor's degree last month. It's been a challenge. Everything that you've said, thank you. I am worried about the children. I have a 15-year-old, and I can't imagine him having to support the principles we have grounded him in 3 years with the challenges I had with my college professors. Yeah. So much to the point that you're saying. I am worried because I was required to take a class on globalism in order to graduate.
Yeah.
I can defend myself. I'm not sure he's there yet, and God willing, he will be. But how do we, as Americans, make the federal government understand that we don't have a lot of interest in UNESCO, in the United Nations, in NATO, when they have their same 8 millennial goals that the WEF has?
So I'll go. It's a great question. I'll go a step further. So I think that one of the great hopes we have for America has to be in the states. The states have so much more power than they realize. We have been bullied far too long by the federal government. The states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. We are the United States of America, and we must recognize and realize how much power the states actually have. So what does that mean? That means there has been this long brewing confrontation that only the left has engaged in for quite some time. They don't enforce laws they don't like, yet we follow laws that we don't like. And that's got to stop. I'll give you an example. In Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, they didn't want to enforce federal immigration law, so they created sanctuary cities. Sanctuary cities are an act of secession. They are. It's saying that we don't like this federal law, we're not going to do it. Well, the media covered for it, and we acted like it's okay. So before I go any further, the federal government has been challenged by the left when they don't like laws that they don't like. So it's about time, in my personal opinion, for the states to flex their muscle and do the following. Texas and Arizona need to build a border wall immediately and tell the federal government, get out of here, it's no longer your jurisdiction. Now, some people don't like that. They say, well, you know, that's not the state's role. Well, it has to be. The point is that we have to get more local and local as the federal government fails us. I'll give you another example. This is not being done, but, you know, kind of goes to show how difficult this can be. Why isn't North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, just build the Keystone XL pipeline? Gas prices are higher than ever. Just do it. Forget the federal government. Make them arrest you. Go to work. And by the way, people say, well, we need leases for federal land. Who cares? Defy them. This is the only way that we're actually going to send a message to the Democrats and to the left. Now, this is provocative stuff. I get it. I understand it. But they have to realize we mean business. They have to understand the sword swings the other way. They're sending the FBI after moms and dads at school board meetings, and we're acting like this is still a fair fight. It is not at all. And so the final thing I'll say is this, is Indiana should do what Ron DeSantis is doing, pass a preemptive measure saying that any measure from WHO, World Health Organization, will not apply in the state of Indiana, period, end of story. Yes.
Any other questions? Question? Anyone else? Yes. I'll come back to you. And then I'll come get you.
Charlie, man, thanks so much for being here. A question I have for you is, I'm in group chats with my buddies, and the gun violence, it's the biggest deal. And I got buddies from high school and college. They're like, man, like, no guns, all the guns. So what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't give an inch on gun control. And so I'm happy to walk through it. It's an unbelievable tragedy what happened in Texas. And the more we learn about it, the more angry I get. There's this inexplicable hour gap between the shooter going in and then the Border Patrol tactical agent going in there. So the excuse they're giving is, well, oh, he stopped killing people. Okay, I'm sorry, what? What about kids that bled out or needed medical attention? You waited an hour before going in there? And so I just want to make sure everyone knows about it. I think cops are heroes. Police officers are awesome. But there's a lot of explaining that needs to be done. The hour gap, 1 hour that we know of right now. Okay, so about guns, look, I mean, we need to make decisions in public policy with our heads and not our heart. Emotions will steer you wrong every single time. And we must understand why we have a Second Amendment. I don't think your buddies in your group chats will resonate with this argument, but too bad. We don't have a Second Amendment for personal protection. We don't have it for hunting deer. Those are nice things. I support those things. No, we have a Second Amendment to protect us against our government. And people don't like to mention it, but it's exactly why we have it. We have a Second Amendment. And let me be very clear. If we did not have a robust and widespread gun ownership community in America, the COVID lockdowns would have been 10 times worse. We would have been Shanghai or Australia. The only reason politicians, when it really matters, when the rubber hits the road, they don't go that extra mile. They know we have guns. Now, we don't have to use them. That's not the point. The point is even in their imagination that there might be something we have that can make their job difficult. Now, I say this and the media says that I'm calling for a civil war and all that. That's not true. That's garbage. I call for peace. In fact, I think an armed citizenry keeps us more peaceful, actually. I think it keeps the government in check. And I'll make one final point on this, which is if you look at the 20th century and you're trying to tell me that you still trust governments after what you saw, what happened in Germany, the Soviet Union, Mao Zedong's China, Cambodia with Pol Pot, or Vietnam, and you're trying to tell me that we should just always just let the government have all the guns? No. The founding fathers understood the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments. I understand people's sensitivities on this issue. I totally resonate and understand that. But I want you to go look right now at Shanghai when 26 million people have been locked in their homes the last 60 days because the tyrant told them to do so. If they had guns, that would not happen. They would ask them and they'd go back to work. The Second Amendment keeps us free. We must be clear why we have a Second Amendment in our country. Thank you.
Very important. Very important. Did you have one last question? And then
the final question.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Claire, and our family came down from Chicago. We have Lincoln
awesome.
Park. Yep. We have two sons, 23 and 20. And a question I have, and I'll bet you a lot of people in this room have, is we understand what's happening as adults, and we know we need courage. How do we instill that in our children without taking all the joy out of their life, right? Yeah. It's this balance between...
Totally.
They're young, they should be happy, they should be joyful. And yet the message I have as a mother is one that's it's pretty darn heavy. How do we strike that balance? Help me with that.
So, that's a great question. So I'm going to spend a little time answering this and then we'll wrap it up. And then I'm also going to kind of give some marching orders because a lot of you say, Charlie, give me something to do. And then I'll give you an extra jolt of hope because we all need it. We need some hope, right? Okay, look, the reality is this, is that this is a really kind of depressing time to live in our country. It just is. I don't like it and you don't like it. I hate seeing our country snatched away from people that I believe are illegitimately in power, that have been doing everything wrong intentionally for a long time. It's very hard to watch. It's hard when I see members of my generation who reach out to me on a daily basis with problems and issues of depression, suicide, mental health issues. Just so we understand, it's the most suicidal, drug addicted, alcohol addicted, anxious, medicated generation in history. It's a very serious issue there. And you're right. We do want them to be happy and we want it to be joyful and all that. And so you got to strike a balance there. At the same time, I believe there's a season for everything. The Bible tells us that. And I believe we're in a season of what would I would call the fourth turning. If you know what a turning is and you read The Fourth Turning, it's one of the great books ever. We're smack dab in the middle of it where this is not going to get better anytime soon. Now, what do I mean by that? That doesn't mean you have to be unhappy. I'm a happy person. Happiness is a choice, by the way. Happiness is an attitude, right? You have to go about it intentionally every single day. Dennis Prager, I think, has written the best book on this called Happiness is a Serious Problem. It's a life-changing book. It really is. With that being said, though, I think you should try to understand that when they're 20 and 23, if they say, Mom, I don't care, that's fine. Give them that space because eventually they will have to care, and politics will take an interest in them even if they don't take an interest in politics. And let me just kind of say one final thing on the younger generation, then give some marching orders / some hope. I said this in the pre-meeting. Look, we got some serious problems with this generation. Rent has gone up 37% in 1 month in Phoenix, month over month. We are creating a generation of renters that are unable to buy homes and are feeling increasingly cynical about the American economic financial system. If we're not serious about addressing this, you are going to see very radical policies and politics come forward in a way that we've never seen before. I'm talking about massive generation bashing, and it's going to be very, very negative. With that being said, the positive is where we could turn a lot of this discontent and a lot of this frustration that younger voters have and say, hey, we're going to be the party that will make it easier for you to buy a home, get married, and have children. Those three things are conservatizing events. Those three things make you more bought into the system. You want to know why people march in the streets and they're looking for meaning because they don't own anything. They're increasingly less married and they're not having children at as high rates. So those are the three things that I would implore to answer that question. So to close it all together, just kind of one plug. If you're not subscribed to my podcast, I would really appreciate it if you guys would consider doing it. We do 3 podcasts a day, 3 hours of radio a day, travel 330 days last year. So you guys take out your phone, you open up your podcast, and you subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. I would deeply appreciate it. It's a way you guys could get behind the work we're doing. So thank you for considering doing that. If you don't know how to do that, we can ask a teenager in the audience here that would be more than happy to walk you through that. So some of you came here tonight, and I could tell you're like, all right, Charlie, I've done everything that's been asked of me, okay? Watch Tucker. I bought the pillow. I have a whole cabinet of Relief Factor. I reverse mortgaged my home. I did everything I was supposed to do. What else do you want from me, Charlie?
Here's Patriot Food Supply.
Yeah, that's right. Preparewithkirk.com, by the way, right? Look, we need to continue to have this attitude of optimism and courage. No longer being spectators, now we're participants, right? That's why I love first principles, what you're doing. I love the school board mom showing up, because if we're serious about saving America, it's going to be that all of us are going to be the arena. Now, not all of you have to go as wild as I'm going, you know, 330 days on the road, going to Berkeley and Boulder back-to-back days and doing podcasts and radio. That's my calling. I'm going to keep doing it. Help us if you can. But instead, for some of you, it's like, man, I can become a precinct committeeman, or I can support a school board candidate, or I'm going to homeschool my kids, or I'm going to create a pod schooling network, one of the coolest stories I heard today. I'm going to do something constructive. So three things. Take time to learn every single day. Learn something you didn't know yesterday about your country, about your nation, or about your faith. You'll be a happier person, and you'll be more convicted towards action. Number two, help support the fighters. There's two types of people in the world that are necessary for this fight: the fighters and the people that help the fighters. There's the George Washingtons, and there's the John Hancocks. John Hancock is really famous for his signature because it was big. He never wore the uniform of the Continental Army. He was a financier. He was a helper. He was a supply chain guy. He made sure all the things were held together, but he was just as important as the people that went and fought in the battles that founded our country. And the third thing that I just want to kind of, we have to build new stuff. We have to build bigger families, build bigger churches. We have to support businesses that share our values. We have to support the next generation of entrepreneurs. We have to build new things. And for those of you that are saying, Charlie, what are the odds? Hey, here's who we have on Team Reality and Team Liberty. We have the world's richest man. We have the number one podcaster. We have the truth. We have the grassroots of America that is not going to put up with it anymore. We have the United States Constitution. Who do they have? Well, they have that weirdo on CNN, Brian Stelter. They have AOC. The worst ideas imaginable. They believe men can become pregnant. America's an awful country. I'm going to place my bet on the side with the truth, the side with you, and the side of the citizen that is rising against the regime. We're going to win if we act, everybody. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.